Chris Kershaw tipping pitches. CJ, how does the hitter see that and take advantage?
Well, first and foremost, Chris, if it did happen, it always happens when the pitcher is in the stretch. Rarely can you pick up pitches when a guy is thrown from the windup, and that's what we saw in that seventh inning.
So, Alex.
Bobby.
Here we are, back on our BS.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about spring training, rambling about Tim Tebow, talking about hopefully some Royals porn.
This is kind of a weird point in the spring because we've reached the point where, like, the shine of the return of baseball has kind of worn off a little bit, and it's just the middle of spring training, and we're just kind of like, okay.
Why do they do a whole month of
this
again?
I'm having fun, but, like, can opening day just get here, please? We're, like, 2 weeks out. We're inching our way there.
Inching is the right term.
Yeah.
Crawling.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
You feel good about the A's still?
Yeah. Some guys look good. Other guys don't look so good. Not really sure if they're going to have any pitching, but they'll have some people out there.
Hold on. Let me consult my phone for another notification about AJ Puck.
I will walk out of this.
If there's none in
studio.
There, if there's not a notification, just give me 30 quick seconds and I'll get another one about him.
All right, I'll pull my phone out and look for the notification talking about how this is Harvey's year where he could finally get over the hump.
Oh, you're so right. If I have to read another thing about Matt Harvey being the X Factor,
yeah.
Matt Harvey has fallen so far that he is just the X Factor.
Yeah.
He went from being the Dark Knight to the X Factor.
This is like
he went from being a blockbuster film directed by Christopher Nolan to being the British reality show started by Simon Cowell.
This is seriously like year four where we're like, is Harvey going to be good or not? I don't know, but let's hope he is, because if he is, that'll be good.
He just pitched today. So we're recording this on Thursday, March, what is it, the 14th? No, March 15th.
15th. Yeah.
We're recording this on Thursday, March 15th. He just pitched today. He was It's probably how he's going to be all year.
Yeah, that's because Harvey at this point is kind of eh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He still throws kind of hard though. And that's all that matters, according to announcers.
If I
had a dollar for every time in spring training I heard someone say, well, you know, teams are just valuing velocity a lot more than just guys knowing how to pitch these days. I'm like, all right, okay. We get it. No one knows how to pitch, they just throw.
Speaking of other pitchers who were very good like 3 or 4 years ago and whose star has fallen a little bit, the one and only Jake Arrieta finally signed after months of protracted negotiations. He is now a Philadelphia Philly.
I feel like I'm being trolled. I feel like it's Truman's Show, and I'm just living in it, and they're just watching my reaction to things that happen on a baseball field.
Yeah. Of course this was going to happen, though. Of course Arrieta was going to become a freaking Philly.
I mean, it makes sense. It's like a match made in heaven in terms of the spending and the, you know, the balancing of the books, because the Phillies have a ton of money to spend now. And
they're not going to be half bad either.
Yeah. Like, they don't have a lot of people to spend it on because they're waiting mostly for their good young players to come up.
Well,
they have no rotation other than him and Aaron Nola.
Yeah, I know. Well, the other thing is, like, no one else was signing people. So, like, the Phillies were like, look, if you're not going to sign Carlos Santana and Jake Arrieta, like, we will. Like, if you guys don't want him, we'll just take him.
Arrieta penned, like, this really beautiful, heartfelt thank you to Chicago for the fans and the city and growing up and how he raised his kids in Wrigleyville and stuff like that. And that was nice. But also, I don't like him. So that's my take.
Yeah.
He's going to be fine this year if he's going to be their second best pitcher.
You remember when Trump won and he was like, now is all of Hollywood going to make the trip over the border? He's like, what?
I don't even know what that means.
Is this a pro-Trump tweet? I don't know.
Oh, that's the best one. You can't even tell.
I know. That bodes well. Yeah, so the contract he signed was also a really strange one. It was like, it's like a 3 years.
Wait, I got it. I got it on lock. I read the Jeff Sullivan piece today. I feel like I am now writing for Fangraphs. So it's a 3-year deal.
Yeah.
But Arrieta himself has an opt-out after the second year. And if he exercises that opt-out, then the Phillies can say no, and they can void the opt-out. But if they void the opt-out, they have to pay him the last 3 years of the contract.
Wait, so it becomes a 5-year deal, right?
It becomes a 5-year deal, yeah. But there is also an opt-out after the fourth year, too, like a team opt-out. So they can pay him for It could either be 2 years, or it could be 4 years, or it could be 5 years.
Couldn't it also be 3 years? Because it's technically just three-year
deal. If no one
deal.
Does anything, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it could be 2, 3, 4, or 5 years.
Yes. It's quite confusing.
That really makes sense.
I mean, it's more complicated than it needs to be. There could have just been a team option. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Whatever. I don't have that many more thoughts about this. Anyone else that we need to talk about? Mike Moustakas, do you have anything to say? Criminally undervalued.
Yeah.
That's what I have to say, even though I dislike him.
Yeah.
Whatever, he lost himself $25 million by chewing gum really aggressively. That's my take.
Whatever you think about Mike Moustakas, he's making like $6 million this coming year. The guy was like a three-win player last year and an all-star and hit like 36 home runs. How many third basemen coming off 36 home run campaigns get paid $6 million? Not many, I would say.
I was listening to Effectively Wild, and they were kind of making the case that, you know, most teams feel like they can develop a Mike Moustakas type where they have an infielder who hasn't quite started hitting yet but fields okay, and they think that they can just develop him in-house for a lot cheaper. And again, this gets back to our conversation about just the way that the bargaining agreement works, that young players don't get paid.
Like, they shouldn't be cheaper.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. They should not be cheaper options, right? They should be, if you really believe that these players are going to be worth as much as Mike Moustakas is on the field, then they should be allowed to make more money.
Yeah, you should be paying them as such.
Yeah, or you should just pay Mike Moustakas. If you want to keep this stupid system that we have, then pay Mike Moustakas for someone you believe is not going to be as good as a cheaper option on your team.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only option. I think they failed to mention that, but I mean, they've talked about it a lot, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, like, regardless, there are 30 teams out there, you know, maybe 5 or 6 teams have solid third basemen, and the rest could probably use a Mike Moustakas, right? Like, the Mets could have used a Mike Moustakas.
Todd Frazier.
Yeah, that's true.
You could either get one or the other. I mean, right. The Mets before Todd Frazier, yes.
Yeah, the Mets needed a third baseman. I mean, Todd Frazier, also criminally underpaid, right?
Well, he just wanted to stay in New York, man. I don't know if you know this. He's from New Jersey. The thing about Todd Frazier is that he grew up a Yankees fan. He's from he's from Tom's River. He's also from close to New York.
Wow.
He used to take the train into the city and root for the Yankees. He just loves New York.
God. Anyway,
$10 million worth of love for New York.
Yeah, for real. Anyway, pay your players. That's really all we have. This is just like one more conversation about something we've been talking about all winter, so we don't need to rehash this again.
Yeah. So vaguely pro-Trump things. Just have to get your quick take on Josh Donaldson.
Is this a new segment? Vaguely pro-Trump things.
Vaguely pro-Trump baseball things. What did your boy do? What did Josh do recently that put him in the headlines? Not even really the headlines, that put him on our Twitter feed.
I don't have the tweet up right now, but he basically, there was some tweet that got deleted where he was tweeting about Barstool Sports, tweeting at Barstool Sports about like Saturdays for the boys, whatever, you know, which is their whole slogan.
Actually are for the boys. Yeah. Women just cease to exist on Saturdays.
It's so true. And then some person like responded to his tweet, and he responded by saying, well, you know, how is saying Saturday is for the boys sexist? Although he spelled it sexiest. How is saying Saturday is for the boys sexiest if International Women's Day is a thing? Isn't that sexist? Was the gist of his argument.
He's speaking some facts.
My response to that is, it's not sexiest. I'm sorry, Josh.
My response to that is that tweet is the Twitter manifestation of his haircut.
It really is. Like, you knew this was coming.
You had to know from the haircut, beard, baseball playing combination that he had this deep down inside of him. Not even that deep, really. He put it on Twitter.
So anyway, if you're an early 20s white guy, you probably retweeted that tweet.
Yeah. In other sort of ridiculous parallel baseball news.
Yeah. So
we're just really moving through these quickly because we have an interview a little later with a friend of Alex's named Austin, who was out at spring training in Arizona this week. And so he's now officially the Tipping Pitches spring training correspondent, and we're going to get to that later. So we're just going to bang through these really quickly. So if it sounds like we're going rapid fire, it's because we are.
Well, okay, so speaking of banging through these, the Kansas City Royals this
week. I'm going to do a supercut of every speaking of that we've ever done. It's just going to be ridiculous because they're very tangentially related.
The Royals this past weekend, or I think maybe it was the weekend before, hosted an anti-porn workshop for their players and coaches. Apparently, they are doing their part to sponsor a fight for love. Quick thoughts on this one. Do you have any hot takes? Any hard news you can bring at me with this one?
I want you to keep going. No, I don't really have that many thoughts about this. My initial thought is just, why? Is this really an issue that's plaguing baseball?
Yeah, so like their whole, Dayton Moores, who's the general manager of the Royals, his rationale behind it is he thinks that like watching porn leads to domestic violence, or there is some sort of correlation there where like, you know, the more porn you watch, like the higher chance there is of you committing some sort of domestic violence, which is not true. Like the evidence for that is very slim. But you know, I get whatever works, I guess. This is such a baseball way of going about these things.
I was just about to say this. This is the most roundabout way to address an issue that you could very easily just address head on that we've been calling for a very long time.
Yeah. Like, how about some actual rehabilitation rather than just being like, we're going to suspend you 80 games and then come back and everything's fine.
Oh, I thought you were referencing the porn thing. I thought they were going to suspend their players 80 games or they find them watching porn. Could you imagine? No wonder, oh God, no wonder Eric Hosmer wanted to get the F out of there.
I also said 80 games as if any major league team would suspend their player 80 games for committing domestic violence.
Yeah, it's more like 40.
Yeah.
At the most.
Yeah, at the high end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If this was college football, it'd be like a half.
So anyway.
Get suspended for half a game.
Yeah, for real. Anyway, dumb things in baseball. Like, this isn't going to do anything and stigmatizes sex work and... How about we just address domestic abuse the right way?
Agreed.
Yeah.
All right, last thing before we get to the conversation with Austin, which was really fun, and he knows a lot about baseball, and you're going to enjoy it. But before we do that, pace of play, our favorite thing to say on this show, where often we have just screamed pace of play into the void of the WNYU basement.
Well, Robert Manfred is doing things.
Robert?
Robert Manfred.
What, are you his mom now?
Well, if he keeps this up, then yes, he's going to be sent to his room.
All right, quickly recap, what are the new pace of play developments?
It's just something like minor. This is going to be implemented at the minor league level, but extra innings start with a runner on second base,
mm-hmm.
and also like pitch clocks and that sort of thing. But it's really the extra innings runner on that is... I think getting people, because again, like, why? Like, I don't care about the minor leagues, but I don't want to see this in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, the thing about I couldn't care less about whether this happens in the minor leagues this year, but the thing about it is once it happens in the minor leagues, that means it's basically just a time, like a ticking clock before it happens in the major leagues.
Yeah. And this is again, like a lot of these topics are just retreading ground that we have tread before, but like no
one. Is that what happens when you retread something? It's something that you've tread before?
But like no one is upset about this. No one, I have not met a single person who's upset about extra inning baseball being too long.
Neither have I. I don't even know if people at Major League Baseball are upset about it. I feel like Rob Manfred just wakes up and just thinks these things, and then he's like, I'm going to do them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't met players. I haven't met coaches,
yeah,
teams.
It comes to him in a dream, and he just does it like unilaterally. He's just like, nope, it's done. Anyway, pace of play. That's it's pacing.
I feel like I just need to get that phrase tattooed on my forehead.
Oh, my God, I know.
Pace of play. Then maybe MLB will hire me.
All right. Let's get to the interview. When we come back, we are going to have the one and only Austin Zimmerman. Show me my silver light. Show me my silver light. I hear a voice calling out for me. These shackles I made in the town to be free. Okay, Bobby, so this is a fun one. We have on the line with us the one and only Austin Zimmerman. He is a college student at Pitzer in Southern California, a high school buddy of mine, and also our resident spring training / Giants expert. Austin, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, of course.
He's like our correspondent. We're just like sending people out into the network of the world. Do we have a spring training correspondent? I feel very official.
Yeah, you guys, the press pass was late in the mail, so I wasn't able to get on the field. But I yelled a lot of questions from the stands and was ignored appropriately at spring training. But yeah, so I spent this past weekend at spring training in Scottsdale at the Cactus League. I got to see four games. The Giants are Giants is my beat, so that's where I was focused. But I got to see them play a lot of other four separate teams and lots of good players. And so I got some notes from that. I can kind of start off with some impressions of players that I think were interesting to watch, or otherwise players that I had kind of interesting insights on. D. Gordon was the first player the Giants Mariners had a game, and I saw D. Gordon get to play some center field, which was something I was really looking forward to seeing. I think everyone is interested to see how that experiment is going to go down. The thing that was really interesting about that game is D. Gordon ended up hitting two home runs in that game in back-to-back at-bats.
What?
In standard D. Gordon fashion.
Now that 2018.
Yeah, 2018 classic. It was part of, I believe, a back-to-back-to-back Seattle Mariners onslaught, which included Nelson Cruz and this like linebacker-looking first baseman named Vogelbach or something.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
Yeah, and so that was a bit strange. But I will say that there were a total of 8 or 9 home runs hit in that game. The wind was blowing straight out, and it was kind of a Cactus League type game. I was texting Alex the whole time, like in shock about how the ball was flying out of the yard. But he did put the ball out. Both of them were line drives, kind of just hooked around the foul pole kind of things. His defense, I wasn't as impressed with as some people have been. He let a pretty catchable ball drop in front of him for a single that I thought, with his speed, that's a ball he should be getting to. I know we're early in the spring and he's figuring out how to read balls off the bat in center field, but I was a little bit disappointed in that. He also didn't show great arm strength from center. He kind of made it like an Eric Burns style front flip throw towards home plate that it ended up about 20 feet up the line. It held the runner at third, but just because he looked like he was going to be throwing it hard more than anything else. I think there was like MLB GIFs or whatever, or Cut 4 was like sending, on Twitter was like putting out all kinds of images of some play at the plate that he was a part of. And it was, anyone could look good coming straight in on a ground ball, throwing to home plate. That's like what you do before the game to like make your outfielders feel good about themselves. It's so, I think,
batting practice for outfielders.
Yeah, pretty much. So it was, I wasn't as impressed with his arm strength. I don't know, but I think the as far as, he's going to cover ground out there. And it's just a matter of him getting his reads right. But it was really interesting to see him out there playing some center field. He played four or five innings out there, which was pretty cool.
I will be interested to watch that because I like D. Gordon, and I want him to do well. And it does seem like the sort of thing where it's like, why did no one maybe think of this before, right? Like his speed feels like it would play perfectly out there. And I didn't see him in action really, but it seems like the arm strength for a second baseman moving to center field is you're like, okay, like I can live with this, I can make this work if your floor is Coco Crisp, who has zero arm,
totally.
Or it's a guy like Kevin Kiermaier, D. Gordon will fit himself nicely there in the middle.
Totally.
I just want to say I googled a picture of this Vogelbach character, and he looks like if Kyle Schwarber absorbed Michael Conforto.
Yeah, he is a substantial man, to say the least. Very interesting. He's a big boy.
Do you have were there other standouts to you, either players or I suppose on field stuff or teams that looked surprising to you, just generally speaking?
Totally. Yeah. Another kind of storyline that I think people were watching was Zach Cozart's transition to third base with the Angels. He's been a second baseman for most of his career, And so he's been now playing third or second baseman and shortstop, I think.
Yeah, he played shortstop for the Reds last year.
Shortstop. Okay, that's what I thought. And the Angels called. There was a good piece in The Athletic. I don't remember who wrote it about Cozart's transition to third. So I think people are watching that. The game I saw against the Angels, he was hitting the ball well, seemed to be, putting good wood on the ball. But he did kind of boot one, hard ground ball to third base. I think obviously that's the play that's going to be the hardest, transitioning to third base. They call it the hot corner because that ball gets there in a hurry. So I think for anyone, that's a tough play, but he did, he's going to have some growing pains, I think, in that adjustment to third base as a member of the Angels, who are going to be a good team, I think.
Yeah. Wait, so did you see Ohtani then?
I did not get to see him play. No, I missed him by one day.
That's so rough.
I know.
I really wish I'd gotten to see him. I even chose the Giants Angels had a split squad that day, and I chose the Angels home game because I figured if Ohtani was going to be in the mix, he'd be at home. But we just missed him because the Angels have that 6-man rotation going, plus it's spring training, so it's tough to time everything. The other person, Mike Trout, hits
he's
the
pretty
baseball
good, I think.
Really far.
Were you there at the game where he hit it over the batter's eye?
I was there.
oh boy,
my ears are still ringing from the sound it made. We got to sit pretty close because Scottsdale Stadium is pretty overpriced, and so you go anywhere else and you're like, oh, like I spend $40 to like sit on the lawn at Scottsdale Stadium, like I can spend $40 to sit three rows behind home plate at Angel Stadium. So we were really close at Angel Stadium and whatever the park is there, and Mike Trout hits the ball really far. He's a freak of nature, and I'd love to watch him play.
Yeah,
the Angel, but all together, those Angels are going to be, I think, a really sneaky good team.
Yeah, yeah, no, and we appreciate the scouting report on Trout. We'll keep an eye out for him this year. If he does anything special.
No, yeah, we got to see most of the Angels A squad, except for Noah Andrelton Simmons, who is out with a shoulder injury, at least was at the time. It's a good team. They pitched the Giants prospect Tyler Beede pitched against them and put him down one time through, and then Mike Trout happened, as it does.
Alex and I were watching that on TV, and as soon as he hit it, I was like, "Well, that's not going to stay in the ballpark." And I didn't really mean that it wasn't going to stay in the ballpark entirely, but then it just completely left over the batter's eye. And we go, "Where did it land?"
it landed in on the freeway, I think, out in Peoria. But Mike Trout was not the only person to do that in that game. The other person who did that, and this is transitioning a little bit to the Giants, but Mac Williamson did that as well. And he did it first, I think, actually.
So what you're saying is Mac Williamson is better than Mike Trout.
This is the only way to interpret this.
That's a little bit what I'm saying. Mac Williamson has come to spring training a completely different player than he has been in years past. He's completely changed his swing to model it after someone like Justin Turner, with kind of a high leg kick, and like he keeps his hands lower than usual, and he is tearing the cover off the ball in the spring, and he's doing it with authority. There was a piece, a Jim Bowden piece in The Athletic. Can you tell I subscribe to The Athletic?
Everyone writes there now, so I don't blame you.
I know. I'm joining The Athletic. Sorry.
I'm leaving this podcast to go join The Athletic. Sorry.
Right now. but Jim Bowden put a piece about kind of, spring training appearances or performances to believe and disbelieve kind of thing. And he was saying, actually, he is pessimistic. He doesn't think that Mac Williamson is here to stay. He thinks he's just, showing that he can be have a 4A player as he has been the last few seasons. But he really has changed his swing, and he looks like a different player. And he's got power to all fields, and he's got big time power. I mean, he hit the ball just as far as Mike Trout did in that game, and I think that's going to be a really interesting part of some of the Giants position battles that are going on. I don't know if you guys have thoughts on that at all, but it's been really interesting to watch him play.
Not so much specifically about the Giants position battles, but just kind of a more general question about the players and the attitudes of the coaches. So I like when I watch spring training, I kind of throw most of it out, and the fact that like players are just getting back into their rhythm, like they are what they have been projected to be in the past seasons when they were playing in high A or double A or triple A or whatever.
Totally.
Did you get the sense that players, managers, and coaches felt that way, or were they really taking this as seriously as a lot of people overreact it to be? Does that make sense?
Yeah, like just as far as I think, there's certainly not a focus on kind of results as such. If that's kind of what you're talking about, like no one's really worried about like.
Basically, I'm just looking for a way to talk myself out of Tebow being as bad as he was.
Yeah. Right. No, I think certainly it's very little results oriented at spring. You can get that feeling from kind of all the post game interviews when you know players or coaches are available for a comment. A pitcher who gave up 6 runs in 3 innings will say, I was hitting my spots. That's what's important. That kind of thing, you know. And you get that sense, kind of. There's weird stuff happens in spring training. I don't know. I think I was at a game where the Padres second baseman went over to field the, I think it was Jose Perella, I believe, went over to field the ball and actually ended up, without touching it with his glove, kicking it to the first baseman.
Baseball.
Eric Hosmer, who picked it up and recorded a putout, which was weird. The other absolutely strange thing that happened in spring training, to pivot a little bit, was I texted Alex about this as well. The Giants played the A's on Monday, and there were nearly several fights broke out. And in that way, maybe people are taking things too seriously. But it was very, very strange. Chris Davis got brushed back and then kind of threw his arms up like, "You want a piece of me?" to Sam Dyson. And everyone was like, "Why is this happening right now?"
Yes, Chris Davis versus Sam Dyson, the all-time rivalry right there.
It was really strange. And the home plate umpire and Nick Hundley was the catcher for the Giants at the time. And everyone was like, Hundley was yelling at the A's dugout, and the plate umpire was yelling at Sam Dyson, and Chris Davis was just yelling into the sky. And it was a really strange, strange thing. Chris Davis ended up walking, and I think he's still on his way to first base. could not have been going slower.
Part of me wants to say this is dumb, but also the other part of me is saying, one time you almost fought someone in a rec league softball game, so...
I have the same experience. Yeah, playing intramural, indoor soccer, and I'm like, yelling at people, and I'm like, come on, guys, it's spring training, why don't we all just get along?
Yeah, exactly.
So that was a really strange experience. Actually, unfortunately, some Giants farmhand came into the game later and broke the finger of an A's prospect.
Which
was a little unfortunate.
He broke his finger? Was that Laureano?
Yes, Laureano broke his finger.
Great. Breaking news.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Broken news.
Oh, God. Broken news. Sorry to break that to you guys. Laureano did break his finger.
This is why we have a spring training correspondent.
Which was really unfortunate. The other A's prospects looked really good, though. Mateo and Barreto looked great. They hit the ball. They were hitting the ball hard. Barreto hit one out with authority. And so I think, the A's have a lot of things to look up to, despite all of Alex's whining. they've got a lot of really good young guys. Obviously, the question with the A's is always, how long are they going to hang on to them? But there's good stuff happening in the Oakland camp right now.
Well, that's good to hear. I appreciate you stroking my ego a little bit.
Your
with
fan
that
ego,
one.
Yeah. Alex has several times predicted that the A's are going to be the breakout team of 2018, and by breakout, he just means they're going to go .500.
Right.
They'll compete for a wild card. I keep saying that they're like this year's Twins, and I'll totally take that. Generally speaking,
the bar is on the floor.
Yeah, this year's Twins, something to aspire
Get
to.
Get hype.
Before we talk too specifically about the Giants, just generally about spring training, beyond what was going on on the field, just in terms of atmosphere, were there ballparks that stood out to you that had the best food or that had the best layout that just provided the most fun experience, in your opinion?
Also, were there any players to kind of build on that really made the atmosphere get up to another level? Were there any players that the fans were getting especially excited about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As far as to start with the ballparks and that sort of atmosphere, I love Scottsdale Stadium. It's right.
Is that the Giants one?
That's the Giants Stadium. And it's a really great ballpark. And in keeping kind of with the Giants MO, they've got good food options there, and it's a fun place to watch a baseball game. In general, like I said, it the Giants also in kind of their MO it's starting to become one of the more pricey options in Arizona Cactus League, which is just, so it goes. And that's tough for a lot of fans. On a slightly tangential note, I don't know if you guys saw, the Orioles are going to allow children 9 and under for free into the upper deck this season, which is really cool. I think that's awesome.
The thing that the Marlins refused to do.
Oh my god! Oh yeah, that's right. I listened to that.
I guess when you're the Orioles, you can kind of get away with that sort of thing. They're not going to be good this year or most of the years in the near future. Mm-hmm.
But also, Peter Angelos is like, I won't spend any money on a pitcher, but I'll let everyone in for free.
Well, yeah. Maybe this is their way of recruiting new young talent. They're like, like, this 9-year-old's got a good arm.
This 9-year-old hit 30 on the gun in the outfield.
It's projectable.
Yeah. Totally. The A's, I really do like the A's spring complex. It's a really nice ballpark.
Should just play there all the time.
Yeah, they should just play there all the time. It's a cool place. It's got like good atmosphere. I love that a lot of these spring parks have like lawn in the outfield. It's kind of a lawn GA seating kind of thing where you just throw a blanket down and you hang out in the sun. I think that's a really awesome like atmosphere to just like kind of enjoy spring baseball, as far as it's pretty laid back and by the sixth inning no one you've ever heard of is playing anymore, so it's kind of just like have a hot dog and hang out.
It reminds me of the Little League World Series, especially how it looks on TV, just people chasing down home runs out there.
Totally, it is very much like that. Especially like during batting practice, it's like just kind of hanging out, like trying not to step on kids and chasing home runs. The food is I think the A's park also may have had the best food. I had an Ike's sandwich at the A's ballpark, which was to me a pretty special treat. I don't know if Ike's is Ike's on the East Coast?
I don't think Ike's is out here.
I have no idea what that is, so no.
Okay.
Well, anyway, speak for all of the East Coast. We don't know what that is.
Well, it's excellent sandwiches in the Bay Area and I think all on the West Coast, perhaps.
Wait, I'm not sure. Are you guys from the Bay Area? Are you guys from Oakland?
You might be. We are. I actually stopped eating beef recently. And so that's been an interesting thing, like especially like going to four baseball games in 4 days and like trying to eat food without eating beef.
God.
Was pretty it was sketchy at times, but it was like I'll have a third pulled pork sandwich today, but mostly you kind of know what you're gonna get when you go to a ballpark like that. And but the Ike's was certainly a welcome respite from the standard chicken fingers and pulled pork. No more hot dogs for Austin.
Sad.
And then let me think about, Bobby, your question about players. To go back to Mike Trout, people love Mike Trout.
As they should.
And he looks like he's having a really good time. And that makes, I think, people like, we were at this Angels game and it was kind of raining, which was weird for Scottsdale, but it was definitely like raining. And like, just that guy comes out of the dugout and like everyone in the whole stadium is just like, there's just like a lot of energy, and like that's because of the person and the player who he is. To talk about you guys, you guys have had conversations about baseball's LeBron, MLB players showing kind of having some personality, and I think I would say he's probably the closest to that.
Doesn't do it from an interview perspective, like he won't speak out like in front of cameras, but he seems like a really cool guy. Like to me, he's emotionally and spiritually, I think he's baseball's Clay. He just loves playing baseball, and he just loves having a good time and hanging out with his bros. And if he could stay on this team and just do what he likes to do for the rest of his life, I think he would. Yeah, and I feel like Clay Thompson's the same way.
Well, and it is really interesting then that you say how hyped up everyone was for him, right? Because we talk all the time. We're like, oh, Mike Trout is like, he's great, but like no one really recognizes it because he's really boring. But
it is,
I guess, refreshing to hear that fans around the game still know that Mike Trout,
but also
very good baseball player.
Skewed sample size of fans there. These are the people that are willing to go to Arizona for spring training.
I know.
But like, you know, if you live in Anaheim, like you gotta go to Arizona.
Yeah.
True.
As well, get out of there.
Nothing tying you down in Anaheim, California.
Yeah. And even as a Giants fan, like Mike Trout hit that ball over the batter's eye, and I was ecstatic. Like, you know, I was smiling ear to ear. Like, that was, you know, just like a good, like, there was good baseball happening, you know. So he's definitely a player that I think has kind of an energy about him that like really is good for the game, good for baseball, TM. So that's the one that stood out to me, well, kind of when you asked that question.
I want my face to be untouched.
So Austin, you and I text relatively frequently about baseball, and and specifically the San Francisco Giants, of which you are a noted fan.
A fanatic, if you will.
Yes, correct. you will often tell me about the players on this team, and oftentimes I think you're making the names up. Because I pretty much know no one on the Giants. What I've realized is, like, my idea of the Giants is still, like, 2014, when I'm like, Matt Cain's still good, right?
Yeah,
like, is Jeremy Affeldt still on the team? Oh, how's Angel Pagan going to do this year?
Sad. Love him.
So tell me, given all this, given the fact that I, nor probably a lot of other non-Giants fans.
Listening to the Effectively Wild preview the other day. I was like, I know four of these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, given that, are the Giants going to be good this year?
I think they could be. I think the NL West has got – there's a lot going on in the NL West. We've talked about this. The Dodgers, I think, there's no question they're going to probably win the division, and they're going to challenge for another World Series title, as much as it hurts every fiber of my being to say that out loud. And I think the Diamondbacks and the Rockies are both going to be interesting. I would put the Giants, Diamondbacks, and Rockies kind of all in the same boat as far as kind of potential landing spots. I think the Giants probably have the lowest floor of those teams. But I think and perhaps the lowest ceiling, but they're all, it's not statistically significant. I would say like the error on those projections, I think is wide enough that you could kind of put them all in the same boat. And for that reason, I think it's, the Giants certainly have a chance to challenge for, a wild card spot. I couldn't in good faith tell you that I think they could win the division this year. but I really do think that, one of those National League wild card spots could go to the Giants, and I would not be surprised if both of them are in the National League West, if both wild card spots come from the NL West.
That hurts. I hope you're also predicting a Nationals breakdown then.
I think the thing with the Giants this year, because last year, unadulterated train wreck. I mean, there was no question about it. The wheels came off. It was a dumpster fire of a baseball team. Really a lot of things went poorly. It started, we really started at the All-Star break of the last season, but, Madison Bumgarner hurts himself riding a dirt bike. Johnny Cueto's hands are covered in blisters.
He's been digging holes all season for whatever reason. He's now in the movie holes.
Yeah, and then you've got really just underperforming seasons from Brandon Crawford, from Brandon Belt, from Joe Panic, and from whatever the black hole was at third base or in any of the outfield positions, frankly, in even a down year from Buster Posey. And so I think we have a combination of things happening with the Giants, and that's they retooled. Obviously there were a lot of big names that came into the Giants. Really, I guess big names if it's 2011, who came into the Giants. And then also they're due for some kind of positive regression to the mean. I think someone like Brandon Crawford, Brandon Belt, Joe Panic, and even Buster Posey are due, to kind of, I think there really was, as silly as it sounds, a lot of just poor luck, that went around, and I think those guys are due to regress in a positive direction, definitely.
Yeah, I think from what I've like read and seen, their batted ball profiles was a lot better than their actual numbers ended up being. But I wanted to ask about the bullpen a little bit. Other than Tony Watson, who they brought in this offseason, right?
Yes, just recently.
Other than him, it's not a list of great guys behind him. There's Hunter Strickland, Sam Dyson, who had a famous meltdown at the beginning of last year, and then two guys I don't know. And then Mark Melancon, if he can bounce back, can be their closer. As a fan, when they turn it over to the bullpen, where is your stomach? Is it in your mouth? Is it in your throat? Are you nervous? How do you feel about how that's going to turn out this year?
Yeah, you know, luckily with the Giants, you know, the Giants are old school in that they're pretty, you know, they like having, you know, pitchers who will throw 200 innings of the year and they'll let those guys go pretty deep into games. And, you know, sometimes it's chasing the ever elusive pitcher win. And you know, that's upsetting sometimes, but for the most part, you know, the Giants pitching staff, there's no question, over the past decade has been known, you know, the starting pitchers have been known for being able to, you know, put the team in a good spot to win a ball game. Which means that we've had, I think, to rely on our bullpen less, than a lot of other teams have had to. But definitely, especially last year in the last, I would say, three seasons, the feeling you're describing is accurate. It's very much like, oh God, here we go. Like the kind of, I mean, really, it even started in the Brian Wilson years. And TBT. Mike Kruko, one of the Giants, color commentator, you know, coined the phrase like Giants baseball torture.
Come on.
Like maybe in light of recent appointments to the head of the CIA isn't an appropriate joke to make, but really, that has been kind of the feeling. It's very much a roller coaster ride with this bullpen. I feel much better about this year's bullpen than I have in years past. I think I saw Melancon pitch this weekend. I thought he looked pretty sharp. There's some questions about how good he is feeling, but I think if they just stay questions and not answers, I think he looks pretty good. He's worked with Tony Watson before in Pittsburgh. Tony Watson was the guy who would hand him the lead in the ninth for the most part. So that's a good relationship they've got there. I imagine one of the names, Bobby, that you mentioned that you didn't recognize was that of Josh Osich.
Correct. He's not even listed on the depth chart on ESPN.com.
So Josh Osich is, I believe, will be on the team this year. He has been around for the last few years on the big league club. And recently, you know, this is all secondhand reporting, but he recently kind of retooled his repertoire to just focus on like fastball changeup. He had been doing like slider, curveball, like other stuff. But he's kind of narrowed it down to like just do a few things really well as opposed to doing a lot of things pretty well. And he's been lights out this spring. I mean, he has not given up. He's given up, I think, one run in 7 2/3 innings with like 11 strikeouts or something like that. Really pitching well. He'll contribute this year as a left-handed reliever. That's really good. Yeah, the bullpen, I think, and Derek Law will be in the bullpen as well. He's got a really funky delivery, super deceptive. If he can kind of keep his head on straight, I think he's got the stuff to be an effective big league reliever. So I feel, all things told, I feel much better about the team's bullpen this year than I have in years past. I would say that that's the area of the team where there's the least uncertainty about who's going to be on it.
It's just about whether they're going to perform.
Yeah, it's about whether they're going to perform. And most of the Giants have a lot of players with minor league options remaining this year, and they're fortunate in that sense that that gives them a lot of flexibility with setting the roster and moving guys around if need be.
Yeah, I think the funny thing about this, I guess, if you can put it that way, is, I mean, there's all this uncertainty on the roster, and you know, Kruko's thing about Giants baseball being torture is very, especially given last year.
I take offense to that. That's the Mets corner. Fatalism and like overreactions, that's the Mets fans corner.
Well, but it's also funny given the fact that like, what, 3 years ago, the Giants were just coming off 3 World Series wins in 5 years. Like 3 years ago feels like a different decade.
So true. But yeah, but that I think Grant Brisby said it really well in his like leaving post from McCovey Chronicles, yeah, in that no Giants fan really has that much ground to complain about. But like, totally, at the end of the day, what does anyone have that much to complain about? It's just baseball, right? Like whether you won or lost, it doesn't really matter.
Absolutely.
All right, Austin, well, we are going to wrap it up here. Is there anything else you wanted to add, just spring training wise or from around the league, anything else you wanted to mention before we let you go?
One of the things that we talked about a little bit is just to run briefly over some of the other position stuff going on in the Giants. I think Pablo Sandoval makes this team this year,
which
this
is
Giants team.
So strange.
I really do.
What year is it?
Yeah, he.
What's
yeah,
my age and, again?
Are you ready for the next one? So is Gregor Blanco. I think both of those guys are going to make this team. They both have left-handed bats that still play. Pablo looks really lost from the right-hand side of the plate, but he still has left-handed power, and I think that'll play at AT&T Park. He's a serviceable corner infielder.
Is Pablo Sandoval a switch hitter?
Sure is.
I did not remember that.
If you haven't seen someone bat from both sides of the plate in the last like 18 months, you definitely don't. It's impossible to remember whether they're a switch hitter or not.
Yeah.
He can still hit left-handed. That's going to be valuable for the Giants. I think he makes the team. I think Blanco does as well. I think the center field thing with the Giants is we didn't get to talk about, I don't think Steven Duggar, who's kind of their center fielder of the future, I don't think he makes the team out of camp this year. I think he'll end up in AAA. They don't want to force the issue, make him kind of force their hand to put him in on the big league club. I think it'll be Blanco and Austin Jackson platooning in center to start. And I think I like Mac Williamson to have that last spot in the outfield. I think he's earned it. And then I would say it's between Chase Darnold and Kelby Tomlinson for the last infield spot. And I think it'll be Darnold. Those are my quick synopsis of some of those battles. I also think Derek Holland will make the team as a swingman and kind of spot starter. He's on the Giants camp as well.
It's always kind of fun to have like just a couple guys on your roster who are like the Hail Marys, right? A guy like Mac Williamson or whoever, yeah, or you know why the Mets are still employing Brandon Nimmo, right? It's like, I mean, yeah, what if he did turn out to be really
great? Prospect. He's a young prospect. He's got a good eye. Come on, don't make me stand here yell.
I'm high on Brandon Nimmo this year. My point is just generally, I like those guys who are like have done absolutely nothing to warrant everyday playing time thus far, but the possibility that you can dream on them is just making them is worth keeping them around.
I too would not have put Brandon Nimmo in a trade for Andrew McCutchen. I also feel that way.
Yeah.
That was a very hard sentence to say.
Yeah, the Giants did not give up too much for those two, you know, household name players they ended up pulling back.
Given their return and like relative ceiling, like Longoria and McCutchen are not what they were 4 years ago, but like they're not bad players.
Yeah,
I would take them in a wash.
Also, like all they have to do is just write the check for them. That's really the only like negative.
Yeah.
But and they have the money. It turns out that the Giants have several dollars.
The Giants have been. As a Giants fan, I certainly feel lucky that the team has been willing to kind of open up the checkbook in times when it kind of seems necessary. That's kind of the tough thing about being an A's fan, I imagine, or a Mets fan in this offseason. is really, you know, and that's the discussion, you know, everyone's talking about collusion and stuff. And it's really, to me, it seems that if you own a Major League Baseball team, you should be able to afford, you know, running a Major League Baseball team. And
that's revolutionary,
right? right. It sounds silly to say, but if truly the excuse is that, you know, it's not financially responsible to like go out and get a solid third starter, you know, if you're the Milwaukee Brewers or if you're the Los Angeles Angels or whatever, then maybe that's not, or God forbid, if you're the Miami Marlins, you know, like that's maybe you shouldn't be in the business of owning a baseball team.
I so agree. I'm pretty sure I yelled that once. I yelled, just write a check for $400 million. Just do it. You're rich.
It really is. Yeah, it really is bizarre to like think about that. Their whole excuse is like, oh, we don't have enough money. Like, it's like, are you serious right now?
Yeah, it seems like it's like a joke.
The Giants are like right up against it, though. They're still under the competitive luxury tax, right?
Yeah,
but they're like depends at like what contracts they move around and actually finalize the roster with.
There's a lot of different ways of calculating it, and a lot of the people who thought they knew what was happening were told recently that they weren't quite accurate, and that the Giants actually have a little more room than people thought. But they are right up against it, as far as I'm concerned. The thing that I found really interesting was that the CBT number is not calculated until the end of the season, which I didn't know, and I found that out, which means that a team like the Giants, who are up against it and kind of right on the line of contention, if they're 25 games out of first place in July, they can dump salary and they'll be, you know, like they could theoretically still add now, go over the tax, and then dump in July if they're out of the running, in order to retool and go after that kind of with the prolific free agent class that's going to be this next offseason.
That's just what the world needs. The Giants signing, like,
Manny Machado,
yeah.
Bryce Harper in right field.
I'll take it.
Oh, boy.
Okay, hear me out, though. Can you imagine Bryce Harper hitting splash home runs?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be pretty awesome.
It would look good. Yeah. He could get his beard back.
It looks really good.
He could keep his beard, I guess. I'm assuming that he's already on the Yankees. He could get his beard back. What am I talking about?
Yikes, that hurts more. Bryce Harper on the Yankees.
All right, Austin. Well, we're going to let you go. Finish writing your thesis. After this brief respite from the real world,
yeah,
we're gonna release you back to the animals.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, best of luck with that. Don't faint in a bodega. That's my advice.
I'll do my best. I appreciate it.
But Austin, thank you very much for coming on and lending us your insights about most Giants players that otherwise I would have not known existed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we can appeal to Giants Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is our crossover.
You've done it. So, and actually, you know, I'm pretty big on Twitter. I actually liked one of my tweets one time. So, I'm pretty up. I'm kind of a big deal.
You're kind of a big deal.
Yeah. You're kind of hot shit. All right. Thank you so much, Austin. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Austin.
Take care.
Well, I definitely know a lot more about unknown Giants players than I knew an hour ago.
I'm going to keep an eye on Mac Williamson. That's what I'll tell you.
He's squaring the ball up this spring.
He is. He's got that Daniel Murphy swing change going. So
stop saying Daniel Murphy's name on this podcast. I'm done with him. He's canceled.
Well, you know who is not canceled from our hearts, but was certainly canceled from Mets spring training.
Speaking of cancellation, Tim Tebow.
Yeah. He's out.
Have you seen the picture of Tebow standing next to Noah Syndergaard? Syndergaard tweeted it out.
No.
It's brilliant. They're a match made in heaven. They're a match made in weight room heaven.
Tebow no longer in the running to crack the opening day roster for the Mets, which is sad because he had a pretty good showing at spring training. I mean, he hit.
Come on, man.
He hit 56.
056. He struck out in over half of his plate appearances.
Yeah,
is that good?
This was he got reassigned to the minor league camp after he went 0-4 with 4 strikeouts.
Golden sombrero.
I respect it, man.
Yeah, he's doing what he can. All right. Well, I mean, I don't have that many takes about that. It is what it is. The numbers, they don't lie in this case. I know we're not looking for results in spring training, but when you strike out like 70% of the time, it's more than results. That's approach. That's skill. That's everything.
Yeah. The thing is, like, most players either have good results or bad results. Tebow just had no results. He just didn't do anything.
Yeah, true. To be fair, he's 31, and he didn't play baseball for a decade, and he faced Max Scherzer, who's like a human lawn mowing machine.
You know, and he is doing more than you or I could ever do. So more power to him, man. He's doing God's work.
These are facts. All right. We're going to wrap up It's been fun. I enjoyed talking about Arizona spring training, which is not something I often think about here on the East Coast. So thanks to Austin. That was a lot of fun. And yeah, we wanted to keep this one short because, you know, not a lot happened since our last episode. If you missed it, our last episode was a themed kind of narrative episode about backyard baseball featuring the creator of the game. And it was probably my favorite episode that we've done so far. So if you didn't listen to it, we would love if you went and checked it out. It's a fun listen, under an hour, and you'll learn a lot that you didn't know about the game before.
Yeah, so thanks for tuning in, guys. Shoot us an email at tippingpitchespod@gmail.com if you have any questions. Hit us up on Twitter. We're always here for you.
Thanks, y'all.
See you next week.